let's be a business that's really easy to do business with. Let's pride ourselves on being a business that's easy to do business with.
This is The Safari. The Safari is a tour around the consumer, brand, and retailing industry. And we have the great privilege here at my company, Traub, to really be exposed to many of the great minds of the industry who are forming and shaping the future of many different parts of the consumer, brand, and retail world. And I felt it was quite interesting for us to be able to not only learn from all of those people as we do every day, but memorialize it into a podcast, which could then be shared with many of our friends and clients and you, obviously, the listener. Welcome back to the 2023 season of The Safari. It's great to be back. This is going to be episode 70. And my name is Morty Singer, and we're going to be interviewing a whole series of incredible leaders, CEOs, and owners of companies that are inspirational to us, that we at Traub believe have momentum and are changing the way things are done. And we're going to focus the first few episodes here, starting today, with Lyndon Cormack on culture, the idea that culture as a change agent, that culture as a way of turning companies around, of optimizing businesses, is something that we will all benefit from. And, you know, the French call it esprit de corps, the common spirit existing in the members of a group and inspiring enthusiasm, devotion, and strong regard for the honor of the group. That's the definition of esprit de corps. And Elon Musk calls it the vectors. Every person in your company is a vector. Your progress is determined by the sum of all vectors. The famous company whisperer Peter Drucker said, "Culture eats strategy for breakfast." And we here at Traub call it return on culture. If you invest in people, if you invest in the teams that will ultimately force the enterprise to move in the right direction, maybe the vectors of Elon Musk, you're onto something. And so returning culture, investing in culture, measuring culture, and ensuring that all the people that comprise the team and therefore the enterprise are singing from the same hymn sheet and happily is what we're going to be talking about. So Lyndon Cormack is the co-founder of Herschel Supply Company. I have loved this business for the longest time. In fact, our backpacks here at Traub are Herschel backpacks, and we absolutely think that this business has been built on an incredible culture of passion for the outdoors, passion for travel, for free spirit, for being able to bring your life with you wherever you may be. And Lyndon really speaks to that in this interview. And he's such a humble guy. I mean, he's just a lovely, lovely person, as most of these companies that are led with purpose and culture are. And I think that, you know, when you hear what he has to say about how they started and where they've come from, where they're going, you'll be incredibly inspired. So please do stick around. And once again, welcome back to The Safari and our latest season. Lyndon, thank you so much for joining me on The Safari. How are you? Where are you?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. And secondly, I'm in Vancouver, British Columbia, and it's a typical gray, gloomy, rainy Vancouver today, which comes with the territory. So,
well, it's great. It's great to have you. And so, look, as our regular listeners will know, I get very excited to talk to the leaders of great brands, whether they've been great brands forever or whether they are newly great brands that are emerging, and in your case, have now emerged as a wonderful example of how to build a business for this new generation, a 21st century brand, maybe is a way to look at it. And as I have already explained in the preamble to this episode and to this season, this is the culture season. We're really trying to talk about and focus on how culture has changed or driven how a business gets to the next level. And, you know, I think I've been quite moved. I have a brother, you know, I have a younger brother. And the fact that family is really at the root of this. I mean, I read that he was your best friend first and then your brother and then your business partner, which is a lovely way to put it, I think. And but that really extends out to everything you guys have done, at least from what I can tell from the outside. And so, you know, in this episode, we'll talk a little bit about the history. We'll talk about the brand and obviously the culture. And then maybe we'll end a little bit on the future of where things are going. So maybe for anyone who's been living under a rock for the last 10 years, tell us a little bit about the founder, the origin story of Herschel Supply Company.
Yeah, I think the thing you just said about my brother, about being best friends first and brother second, business partners third, it is true. But it also became something I've learned that's the case. It wasn't something that maybe when I was 17 or 27 years old, I was saying. It was something that you just witnessed how other dynamics worked. You witnessed how you dealt with your friends versus, you know, others in your close circle. And, you really figured out that was, you know, a foundational element for Jamie and I, especially. So Jamie was working with K2 Sports, so a sporting goods conglomerate, and I was working for Vans Shoes. That was sort of for the last, so the 10 years before Herschel. And, we really looked at the bag world specifically and thought it was quite boring. We loved the aspect of how exciting it was in the outdoor business and how what a utilitarian important object that was. And we loved how it was celebrated in luxury as one of the most coveted items. And we looked in the middle of more the generalist space or the commodity space. And we found the business just really boring, and it didn't have a brand that had a real heartbeat to it. I guess we couldn't find what we were looking for. So through lots of chatter, lots of sharing ideas back and forth, I tend to like starting sentences or just happen to do it a lot with, wouldn't it be cool? And, you know, there's a lot of those, wouldn't it be cool if we could do this or could do that, or it could look like this. So we started and it was.
And what year was that?
That was late 2009. And we just started trying to figure out how to make bags off the side of our desks. We both had jobs. So we were doing this sort of bootstrapped and trying to figure it out. And we were doing it together, and we relied on each other a lot to try to figure out how we get this idea to be an actual tangible product. And we kept on just grinding out and ran into more obstacles and barriers. So we were able to navigate those and just looked forward to trying to bring a brand to life. And maybe I'll end on, we were sales reps, which was an awesome culture, especially in the sporting goods areas that we were involved. I mean, it was almost so addictive. It was hard to leave because of the amount of the kind of people we got to collaborate with and work with, and the brands we worked with were awesome. And it was hard to leave those roles as well. And but we were restricted by territories. And so mine was, you know, Western Canada, or Jamie's was something similar. And we were like, well, our whole territory has become the world now, which was pretty exciting for us.
So it's a good segue maybe into the birth of the brand. And obviously Vancouver is a place on a map, but it also stands for something for especially those that live there. But maybe, you know, for building a global brand, maybe more importantly for those who don't live there, that I think sort of the Pacific Northwest of the United States, but also obviously in, you know, just north of the border in Canada where you are, it is it's a time that is very aspirational to be in those kinds of locales. And we often speak about, and I think I've on this podcast have spoken a little bit about people gravitating a little less to Milan, Paris, and New York, and a little bit more to Vancouver, LA, and Sydney, and how the place, the lifestyle can be imbued into a product. And if that nexus actually clicks and happens, that the dreams that maybe the aspirant consumer into the lifestyle can actually be partially fulfilled. Speak a little bit about where you guys are from and how that has really left its stamp on Herschel Supply.
Yeah, I mean it's a good question, and as much as we haven't conversed about this previously, it's interesting because I've been asked not a number of times, whether a lot is the right adjective or not, who knows, but I've been asked a number of times if I could live anywhere in the world, where would I live? And I sort of say, and it's not meant to have any sort of egotistical aspect of it, but it's kind of a realistic aspect. I'm like, well, I can live anywhere in the world. I mean, the world's a beautiful place that you can move around, and with technologies these days, it doesn't really matter where you live. But I say I want to live in Vancouver. And so it's by choice. I mean, I'm Canadian as well. And so it happens to be, the country I grew up in. But, and I also quite often pick on Sydney, Australia as another spot that I could just really see myself living in, and sort of my two of my favorite cities in the world. My brother and I, we have one foot in nature and one foot in the city. And it's the having that bounce and enjoying that bounce that I think makes Vancouver, the Pacific Northwest, Sydney, Australia, these kind of places really, really interesting. And we have as much fun in the backcountry snowboarding together or as brothers or individually, depending on the day. And I think that whether it's the built into you from a Vancouver sensibility standpoint, it's you just really appreciate both. Mm-hmm. And if one was taken away, it would be really hard, yeah. Right? And I think that's what occasionally other cities potentially do, is take one away. And if I could only have the awesomeness of New York and Paris, but I would lose the mountains and nature, and it just the yin and yang wouldn't work. And I think that 12 years ago Vancouver was much different as well. I mean, people, it was hard to start a brand in Vancouver. We didn't have subject matter experts, we didn't have all the I worked at this brand and now I'll move over, yeah, to this new brand. We didn't have a lot. We had, of course, Lululemon has been an amazing brand from here. Aritzia has been an incredible brand. We have Arc'teryx, but the brands are
a pretty good lineup.
Pretty amazing, but they've also been really growing for the last decade, right? It wasn't, they were these.
Yeah, they're hiring people too, right? Yeah,
totally. So it's, anyways, it's a lovely place to live. It's a lovely place to call home. It's also a lovely place to leave, right? I love leaving Vancouver, but I love coming home. And I think that's the true, special aspect of this city, is it's okay to leave, but you love coming back.
I think what's so interesting, though, about Vancouver is, you can see the mountains from there. To your point, you're of the city and of nature at the same time. And many of the great brands in the history of the world have all come from a city. You can imagine, you pick a brand, you can pick the city that they're from. And I think that it's quite a special thing. But you're equally contemporary and modern, but you're also at the same time, the brand is rooted in nostalgia. I noted that your railroad stripes within the bags, I think are a little tilt of the hat to your grandparents. And I think your grandfather actually used to wear railroad stripes to his job back in the day. And you contemporize those a little bit with the red and white versus whatever he might've been wearing back in the day. But you're also touching a chord around this feeling of nostalgia around, products that are made well, and that they may look contemporary. They have a twist and a nod back to the past. I mean, I love the detail of that. Can you speak a little bit about that and maybe some other anecdotes?
Yeah, I mean, I think about product in general, there's lots of different ways that we'll say it, but quite often we'll say we're classics with a modern twist. Mm-hmm. So taking those classic nostalgic items, researching them, figuring them out, but how do we make them for today? So simple things like from a very utilitarian fashion, but you know, we have a nostalgic looking bag, but it has a padded laptop sleeve in it. You know, those sort of things where you, from the outside, you wouldn't assume it has that feature. Or if you bought a vintage one, you wouldn't have that feature. By the way, how do we, again, celebrate the nostalgic nature? Or quite often, as we say, we look back before we leap forward, and with products. And yeah, really, sort of taking that aesthetic of vintage outdoor, vintage mountaineering, but making it for the city, you know, and how do we take those products which have a certain aesthetic or, you know, sometimes that leans a little bit towards the mountains, but also making it very, very right for walking the streets of Soho, whether that be in New York or London. That's important. So not going too far in one direction.
Yeah.
I always find a little bit with the outdoor brands, as an example, when I see someone wearing a very, you know, technical bag or very outdoor specific bag in a city, my mind, not to them specifically, but goes like sort of maybe.
Are you judging them a little bit there, Lyndon?
I'm probably judging a little bit, but not in a super negative way. But I'm like, it probably fits more in Jackson Hole, just like when I see someone with some bougie bag rolling through Jackson Hole. I'm like, why don't you have something more outdoor? I hope we've found that really nice balance that allows people to get around where they're going, whether that's a city or the planet Earth, and figure out where they're moving from A to Z and having the appropriate product for that.
So there are three, I think, they may be old pillars, maybe they're still the pillars of design, culture, and travel. When your brand now is being forced to show up in different places, because presumably, obviously, you were built off of wholesale, I think. You obviously have a huge direct-to-consumer business. You're starting retail. You probably do pop-ups and with certain partners around the world as well. Does the brand, or just branding, forget just the brand, but just in your view, do you amp up design in some places and then amp up culture in other places and focus more on the travel piece in other instances? I mean, how, or do all three show up in as a monolith together in everything?
Well, I think it would probably start, the seed would be planted with travel and the spirit of it in general. I mean, I'm pretty good with words, and I can try to convince you that your commute to work is really, really fun, and we can be a part of that journey as well. But the reality is, when you or I or others are preparing for a trip or even on that trip, we act a little differently. We try new things. We're more open to new ideas, even maybe new food, you know, things that I might not look to unearth in my own city. When I'm away, I'm trying to experience all sorts of new things. Mm-hmm. I shoot more photos. I'm documenting. Mm-hmm. Whether it's my camera or my iPhone, I'm documenting more. Mm-hmm. I'm going to cultural institutions, whether they're small galleries or big museums. I'm seeing those. I'm seeing important places of interest. You know, and things of discovery. I remember maybe 15, 20 years ago, I was in Mexico City, and I stumbled upon the Frida Kahlo and Diego Rivera's home. And I mean, it changed my life. It literally, you know, that moment when I'm just, you know, there and witnessing, like, someone who I'm not trained in the arts. I didn't know who Frida Kahlo was. I didn't know Diego Rivera, but it changed my life because it all of a sudden invigorated me to try to go find out more. And then when you all of a sudden start getting all these awesome connections between what you just discovered, it just opens up more and more to you. And I think that, When you take up all the awesome things about travel, which potentially isn't a suitcase, right? It's the destination that we're excited about, not the stuff we sell you to get there. We're only a small portion of it. But just taking that spirit of our love of travel, and then when you think about how that instills into our love of design, mm-hmm. our love of all things cultural, it just embodies so much of that. And I think that I prefer to act out more of the things we talk about rather than talk about things. Yeah. Right. And I just think it's so organically happening, when you're away. And then it's formed so much inspiration for the future. And that just doesn't just mean a color palette or why we chose this blue versus that blue, but just it informs how we act and how we make decisions because of all the awesome experiences we have.
Yeah. You referenced words earlier, and I think there's a few words that I think struck me quite heavily about the brand. And I can't remember whether it was you who said it or your brother, but it was, our sport is travel without a tour guide, such that someone feels independent and free to be alone, and they have everything they need on their back, in their backpack, or now in the luggage that you make for them. And that it harkens back to a little bit like you think of Hemingway or Teddy Roosevelt, you know, getting ready, maybe back in the day when Abercrombie and Fitch was a different kind of outfitter, right? The original type of old school outfitter for the explorer going off to the Amazon or Africa or wherever it may be, that you're effectively empowering a cultural explorer to be able to be independent, free, and able to globetrot as a nomad of the 21st century, which I think it comes across so incredibly well in everything you guys have done. And so I take my hat off to you, man. It's an interesting thing. So I think what we'll do is, therefore, as a foundation, therefore everyone's heard about now the brand. Let's talk about culture. So culture means so much to us here at Traub, and I think it obviously does to you. So let's rewind the tape a little bit. Obviously, it starts with family. It starts with your best friend and brother. How has culture and your relationship, and how have you created the Herschel Supply family, starting with the two of you? And does that come up? Am I using those words? Do I feel them out from the outside? Or are they indeed how you guys show up?
Yeah, it's interesting. Because it's constantly evolving. I mean, that's, you know, using the overused word of culture. I mean, that's just culture. It evolves, it changes, it adapts.
It has to.
I would say from the first 5-6 years, we just never used the word, right? I mean, people almost would ask us as we were bringing and onboarding new people, it's like, what's the culture like? And we would quite often say, like, our culture is just a group of like-minded individuals from different places coming together under one common goal and working with each other to figure shit out. I mean, that's our culture. And it was always like, I always was like, sort of felt a little bit like I should probably get a branding agency to like help me with this, so I can actually just have like a one-liner. Cause I'd probably, like I typically do occasionally, go on and on, but it was the real just organic nature of, you know, a diverse group of people coming together. And Jamie and I came from the skateboard and snowboard and that world. And I also spent time in the bike world as well. But I think which is an interesting culture in itself, because you're bound by and brought together by a love of a sport or a love of you know, in skateboarding, counterculture, and you love it. And if you're like, happen to be in those stores, you're like a custodian of that culture. Like the kid who's just figuring it out or coming in or trying to get into it. I mean, first of all, there can be a big barrier, mm-hmm. right? Of going like, hey, it's intimidating. But I think quickly you'll find that the individuals who fell in love with that, those kind of places, you know, again, the bike shop, you think about the bike shop or the skate shop or the snowboard shop, we're just coming together because we love something yep. similar.
Enthusiasm.
And I think that we probably took our skate shop mentality and just said, hey, we know we all love different things. Hey, you know, even back then, whether it was people who skated street or transition or whatever, much different sports in reality, but it's just coming together and just celebrating something we love. And you know, I think in the early years, people really loved what we were doing with Herschel, and they felt like, and they were all the people who worked with us, whether they were employees or even people that we were selling through wholesale, et cetera. I think they really felt part of a brand. And you know, one of our big pillars in the early days were, let's be a business that's really easy to do business with. Mm-hmm. Let's pride ourselves on being a business that's easy to do business with. And I had to add in later, it's not about saying yes to everything because you're allowed to say no. But I always use the department stores, or sorry, the general store on a main and main intersection in any town. And if you had two general stores or hardware stores that were selling similar things, and one gave you epic service and helped you find what you're looking for and maybe helped you figure out some solutions to what you were trying to fix, and the other one was just like, yes, yeah, simply those are down in aisle 9 or aisle 10 and you were fending for yourself. I know as an individual, if I found great service and people would deliver me amazing service, I'd go there all the time. Now, sometimes they might not have what I'm looking for, and that's okay. But the reality is just trying to be that kind of company and then being trying to be that kind of leader and then trying to have the people that are coming to your organization have that kind of attitude. I think it went a long way. And so 5 years, 6 years in, I think that culture wasn't a thing we talked about a lot. It was something that we just made sure that we had fun together. We worked hard together. We celebrated together. And we were a brand that I think generally when you had touch points about doing business with us, I think the vast majority of our partners, our distributors, our retail partners, and our employees would say that was a fun place to be and a good group of people to do business with.
We'll be right back. I want to take a second to explain to you why Traub is able to bring you the safari. We pride ourselves in being at the very center of a very global, very complicated consumer and retail landscape. And in our travels, as we help think, manage, and expand businesses in many different channels and geographies, we're able to meet and learn from some of the great minds in this industry. And it's really wonderful to be able to bring them to you. And in doing so, I hope that you, the listener, will be able to learn a little bit more about what we do at Traub as well. Back to the safari. Yeah, it's interesting you talk about the skate culture and the history. I mean, I think many businesses that were born out of the three S's of, you know, snow, skate, surf, are naturally people who cared about their environments, whether it be their communities or whether it be the natural environments around them. Ultimately, I find that, you know, it gave you the license potentially to also care about the environment, the planet, and sustainability, which has been, I think, probably longer than most. Before it became trendy to do it, before the greenwashing stuff happened, that you guys were, I think, already messaging quite heavily around sustainability and caring for the environment and the great outdoors. And has that been a very early thing in your thinking?
I mean, we tried to build quality that the product that lasted, right? I mean, I think the most sustainable thing you can do is make product that lasts. And we went to our factory. So people, the consumers go, okay, it's got a lifetime warranty. But all the work that goes beyond that with how much work our team had to work with factories for compliance, for materials, just trying to figure it out so we can, you know, not be true to what we're trying to do, make products to last, is really important. When you mentioned surf, skate, and snow, it's interesting, especially growing up in those worlds, that authenticity is the most important. And I remember this from like, oh God, it must be 30 years ago now, I'm so old. But I remember having a conversation at an awesome little snowboard shop in Calgary called The Snowboard Shop. It was operated by and started by a legend named Ken Ockenbach. And I remember there was a Trans World Snowboarding magazine that came out. And I remember that it had a Butterfinger ad in it. And it was the first time sort of an outside company came into like this magazine, and it was chatter. It was like, what's this in there? Like, yeah. And I didn't know anything about anything back then. I was, you know, 15 or 16 years old, but I just remember that chatter. And I think that plays for like the guard of the authenticity of a sport. I mean, of course, in those sports have become very mainstream now and all that sort of thing. So the ads are all sorts of various things, but I think that, there's a, just a natural protection. But again, I don't want to overuse the word organic aspect, but it's like, you're just part of it. And you just want to sort of protect it a little bit as well. Like, it's sort of like you want to make sure that you're inclusive, because so people can come into the sport for sure. But you just don't want a whole bunch of kooks hanging around, right? And I think that if you can do that at a company as well, and just have this very organic conversational, I think people sort of understand the rules without putting the rules out there into the world.
And but I think interestingly that culture, again, and we don't have to harp on about it, but of people from that community are incredibly inclusive people in general, I find, 3S community. And they let people be themselves. And when you let someone be themselves, then the creativity flows and you get that left and right brain connection between those people who, you know, will create that alchemy together. If you put them in a silo and tell them to be Mr. or Mrs., you know, automaton, then you're not getting their best self and their creativity gets stifled. And in a product development business, a marketing business, a people business, it's sort of an interesting provenance to have the, you know, that skate background, I think, because it lets people be themselves. Do you think that's correct or just a bit too whimsical?
I think it just, I think it happens naturally. I mean, again, I come from the early days of certainly snow, maybe less so skate, but certainly early enough. And it was the counterculture, right? And you just, and sometimes that's fun. Like you're sort of something new and it's always evolving. And, you know, I give credit. Again, we're not, and just to be clear, we're not a skateboard or a snowboard brand. We always say like, hey, we got sand between our toes and we love to surf. You know, we certainly, you can tell people if they're goofy or regular by looking at a lot of people around here's shoes, but we're not a skater or a surf company or a snow company. Yeah. I think it's trying to take that sensibility, of all the things we've learned and apply it elsewhere. And again, I don't know if it's just learned because you just practiced it. And I think people appreciate that, whether they came from those industries or not. We probably speak a little differently than some people and we act a little differently. I hope that those industries are inclusive. I think they're very open-minded. I think that from a participant level, I think there's probably a little work on diversity that happens, but it's a very open-minded industry.
So I think being mindful of time, I'll switch over to the last category here just to get you back to your day and to keep things moving. Just to end in the last bucket of just talking a little bit about the future. So you've just opened at least your first store in New York City, I believe, or which has imminent or just happened, I think. Maybe today or yesterday, I can't remember, but
it happened last week, yeah.
There we go. I want to talk about two separate but maybe intersecting things. One is retail hospitality, which is something that we're seeing out there a lot, this notion of bringing people into one's home. And then the other thing is retail as media. This notion of a billboard, the retail store is a billboard that's alight all night long, even if it's closed, and people can drive by past after dinner. And I think you talked about that as a billboard. We use retail as media or the media value of retail as you get put in the right locations to fuel omnichannel. And then, you know, you think about Orvis that has their, you know, a dozen or so retreats where you go, you know, hunting and restoration hardware, just opened a hotel in the meatpacking district. They're sort of taking retail hospitality to a whole new level. Talk about those two things in the future, potentially of Herschel. You used the word community, a community center around the retail environments, potentially in your release. So do those two sort of overlapping elements resonate with you?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think that from a foundational element of my view, our view on retail is that it needs to make money. You know, they need to be profitable stores. Retail is really expensive, not only build outs and rent and people and lights on and updates and all of those things. So we try to look for a sustainable model, which we believe we have in order to open these awesome stores. So the first thing, so I think why I brought that up isn't to sit around talking about profitability, mind you, that's really important for us, is that retail is a billboard, is amazing because it's an amazing billboard, but we don't look as, I don't want to put there out there into the universe that I think people should go open up loss leaders and stores that lose money, but they're an awesome billboard. Maybe that benefits people's e-commerce business and all those sort of things, which I actually believe they would. But it's funny when you think about 2009 versus this year, and certainly even in the last number of years with all these, you know, direct to consumer startups and doing things a lot differently than how we did it through, you know, always having an e-commerce site since day one, but having a lot of wholesale international distributors, which is, you know, less typical in this day and age than it used to be. I think that the us having a store allows these individuals or end consumers who have these collective thoughts about who we are. And Herschel is an eclectic brand, and we have lots of different interests and lots of different things we love. And we're not, you know, we're not only into one thing. But I feel that the opportunity to invite consumers into the house of Herschel, it teaches people about things we care about. And I think it teaches people about our love of design, probably our love of utility, because we don't, our stores are well built, but they're functional retail stores that work. It teaches about our eclecticness and that we're not only into one thing. It teaches people about our love of how to get around a city, mobility in general, whether it's trains, bikes, skateboards, walking. It teaches people that we love that. It teaches people about our breadth of offering, which of course you can search on our website. It has all the breadth of offering, but it's when it's real tangible in front of you, and you get to have like awesome sales associates come and like answer questions and show you products and show you hidden features and tell the story, as you mentioned earlier, about like the engineered striped liner. It's like, oh, those are the founder's grandfather who worked in the, you know, managed the grain elevator in this little town in the middle of Canada called Herschel. And, you know, I was like, what, the brand's named after a town? Well, all those little things that unless you, you know, really dig into, you know, figuring out what we're about, you find out. And so I think that retailing, good retail in general, should make you feel welcomed, should make you feel informed, should teach you people about the brand, should let people know what's coming next and what you care about. And that's going to be certainly individuals, people on the move, and the environment as being really, really important pillars.
Yeah.
And in relation to, you know, my jealousy of other brands opening hotels, I'm quite often people, I get asked this quite often, but it's, you know, what would be your favorite collaboration? And I quite often say, I'd love to open a Herschel hotel, and one that could have a boutique hotel environment, but maybe more of a modern take on a hostel, everything down to what is in the gift shop, you know, things that I just, you know, I love curated gift shops, or how the check-in experience works, or what's the food and beverage option. And if you think about all those under a Herschel lens of what that could do, be like, oh, you start to learn more and more about what this brand and all of the collective people who work on it every single day care about. And, yeah, I think it's an amazing, I mean, the Restoration Hardware Hotel or Equinox, you know, you sort of all of a sudden start to assume, not assume, you learn more about what those brands care about based upon the decisions that those brands are forced to make. Yeah. And so, and then just, I know I'm going on and on, but I mean, is there a better billboard? I mean, if you're on a great street, you've got all your products there. You've got an open showroom. You've got people to help you answer your questions. If you've got people coming and going, whether they're coming in or not, I used to use the stat, you know, like let's say we get 15 or 20% conversion on a day, which is pretty good. You know, I think that most retail people would be nodding their heads and like, yeah, that's a fair conversion. Well, 80% of the people or 85 didn't buy anything.
Yes.
So, you know, but they had an experience. Now, we have to make it our goal for them. The reason why they didn't buy something wasn't they didn't like us, but they were just didn't need it today, or they were browsing, or they were shopping, or they were looking for something else, whatever. But those impressions, I mean, they're phenomenal. And when they do need something, whether they come back to our shop or go into their local Nordstrom or go on to our .com or others.coms, we're going to be there as a brand, and they know a little bit more about us when they are finally checking out, which I think is really important.
Yeah, my favorite retail metric is ROV, return on visit, which is sales over gross foot traffic, because ultimately it's the great equalizer. If it's raining or it's sunny, you can't run away from ROV, because it's all about who actually showed up and what did you sell them and what did you manage to get them to do. But I couldn't agree more. Listen, I promise I'd get you back to your day. I'll end with this. I'm a photographer. I've been a photographer my whole life. I have bought more backpacks, and I have more backpacks than frankly anyone in my family cares to admit. I continue to, for the last 3 or 4 years, only carry Herschel backpacks, whether it's for business or for pleasure. So much so that every one of our trial backpacks is a Herschel Supply Co. backpack. And I did that way before I ever met you. So it's such a joy and a great pleasure, and frankly, an honor to spend some time with you here. And I wish you really nothing but the best of luck to you and your brother and to everyone involved with your incredible company. And so Lyndon Cormack, co-founder of Herschel Supply Co., thank you so much for joining me on the safari.
Yeah, it's been awesome. And I love that you're a user of Herschel, you've been giving Herschel out. And I think the one thing to end on is that I think the beauty of Herschel is it lets actually people be their own individual. And we're just a small portion of accompanying the journeys, you know, we're just on the ride. And I think that we, as much as we're a great brand that loves design, culture, travel, et cetera, but we're also just can be a little bit of a backseat to people's own personalities and individualities. And I think that's one thing that maybe we don't get as much credit for, but we do it on purpose. And let the individuality shine, and let us just accompany people on these amazing journeys they're on throughout their life. So thanks for being a supporter, and thanks for having me on. It was a great pleasure.
That's a great place to end. You said that you take a back seat to other people's personalities, which is a beautiful thing to say. So with that, Lyndon, thank you so much. If you want to learn a little bit more about Traub, you can go to traub.io, where you'll learn a lot about everything that we do. If you're enjoying the safari, please do share it with your friends and colleagues within the industry. And please also don't forget to subscribe and like it. Until next time.